This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
A Pint of Science 2019, recorded on location in Brew Union, Palmerston North, with MPR.
The 22nd of May, so what do? Genomics. Simon Hills from Ngāti Porou. Kiwi Whakapapa, genomics and conservation. What do we need to know in order to manage populations of endangered species? This is a question that Hapu from Rafferty in the Bay of Islands wanted answered about North Island brown kiwi living on their whenua. This talk will tell the story of this question and the partnership that emerged to develop genomic resources for kiwi populations. The research undertaken aims to generate genetic insight into the whakapapa of populations to assist local Māori to enhance the kaitiakitanga of this taonga bird.
Kia ora koutou, everybody. Thank you very much, Kat. I'm going to talk to you fellas from over here. Now, I need everybody to do me a favour. Apparently, I have to keep this on my chin. I'm going to forget that, so I need you lot to remind me. Cool? Right. So, yeah, I'm an evolutionary biologist up at Massey. Where did I come from? So, I'm born in Gisborne, so I'm Ngāti Porou by whakapapa. Then, when I was really young, we moved to Palmerston North, and I grew up mostly in the Manawatu. Now, from a very early age, I was going to be a scientist. From about 5 years old, the only thing I wanted to be was a paleontologist. And I said to Dad, "Dad, I'm going to be a paleontologist." Dad said, "There's no money in that, boy. Think of something else." So I had to think about that and came back to him in high school. And I said, "Dad, I'm going to be a marine scientist." So my dad says, "Power, kina, crayfish." He says, "Yep, all good, boy. You can be a marine biologist." So then I finished high school, and I thought, okay, what am I going to do about this marine biology thing? Turns out it was a postgraduate degree at Otago. So I thought, okay, I've got to do some undergrad. Massey's in the backyard. I'll go to Massey. Turns out I was quite good at this thing called genetics. And at the end of my undergraduate degree, a master's opportunity came up. So I did a masterate in genetics. Kind of lost my track on the whole marine science thing. Got a job after I was doing my master's in a lab at Massey studying evolutionary biology. And then this opportunity to do a PhD came up. One of the lecturers came in and said, "Oh, Simon, you want to do a PhD on mollusks?" I'm like, "Oh, yeah, sounds good." So what I ended up doing was a PhD that combined paleontology, genetics, and marine science all in the one thing. But that's not what I'm going to talk to you tonight about. What I'm going to tell you about is a really interesting project that I'm part of with a bunch of great people, a lot of them at Massey, looking at the whakapapa of kiwi, New Zealand kiwi bird. And I'll give you a little bit of history about this project because it's quite an interesting story. So a few years ago, Doc up in the Bay of Islands held a meeting to talk to a bunch of conservation groups and local stakeholders about what they were thinking about doing in terms of moving kiwi around the landscape to rescue populations and things like this. Now, one of the drivers of the project, the Kiwi Whakapapa project that I'm part of, a guy by the name of Richard Witiheda, who is from Rafferty up in the Bay of Islands there, him and one of his komatua went to this meeting and basically said, "Oh, what are you using to make this decision about moving these kiwi around?" "Oh, just these numbers that have been floating around for a while." "Have you talked to any of the local Māori about that?" "Oh, a little bit." So Bundy and Richard and his kamatua, they said, no, we've got to think about this a bit harder. So you learn something every day, right? So what eventuated from that is an agreement between Doc and particularly Richard's hapu, Ngāti Kuta and Patukeha up in Rafiti, to stop or to hold off on this Kiwi Translocation Plan until some more study could be done. And shortly thereafter, Richard ran into a lecturer up at Massey by the name of Isabel Castro, who'd been working with Kiwi, particularly Kiwi behaviour studies, for quite some time. And they got to talking. And it turns out that they're now together and quite a good partnership. And they're the sort of primary leaders of the Kiwi Whakapa project. Then Isabel said to me, "Oh, Simon, you've got a bit of Māori blood and you're interested in genetics. Would you like to help out on this Kiwi Whakapa project?" And I said, "Yeah, that sounds like a really great project, particularly because it was really strongly led from a Māori perspective." And we'll get into that when I talk about the details of that project. Where am I up to? So the idea of this Kiwi Whakapa project is to look at all of these populations across the landscape of Northland from a genomic perspective to really understand in detail how they're all related, how they're connected, the health of those populations from a genetic perspective, so that you can use that information to inform what do you do with those populations? How do you move Kiwi around to improve the genetics of any given population? Which populations should you put... individuals from which populations should go together versus populations that shouldn't. So where do we start with that? Well, we think about what do we know about Kiwi genetics already at the point in time that we started this project. And if you look at the scientific literature, there's about 40 papers or so that have focused on Kiwi genetics. A decent chunk of those are looking at what is the relationship of Kiwi to other birds. And already we've got some really interesting things going on. So traditionally, when people had looked at what a Kiwi related to, you look at New Zealand, you've got this small flightless bird. Oh, and there's this moa, extinct flightless, large flightless bird. The traditional theory was that those two were most closely related because they're both flightless. It's hard to lose flight. They probably, a common ancestor came along, lost flight, and then you've got small ones and big ones. That changed completely when we got the genetic information about these things. It turns out that Kiwi is most closely related to the elephant bird from Madagascar and not moa. Moa is not the closest sister species to Kiwi. What that tells us is that a flighted ancestor made it to New Zealand, or different flighted ancestors made it to New Zealand and lost flight independently. That's really interesting. So already genetics was chasing our understanding of the family of birds that Kiwi belong to. Just check my notes here. So the other thing that the genetics had helped us with is really understanding how many species of Kiwi there are. So if you look at the current understanding, we think about 5 species of Kiwi and 11 taxa. So what does that mean? There's 5 species of taxa, 5 species of Kiwi. North Island brown Kiwi, southern brown Kiwi, Okarito brown Kiwi, little spotted Kiwi, and great spotted Kiwi. Where do the 11 taxa come from? So each of those break down even further. So we're going to look particularly at the North Island brown Kiwi. There are 4 lineages, so groups that have separate genetic heritage, basically. You can sort of think of them as cousins. There's the Northland brown Kiwi, which is the one we'll focus on. There is the Coromandel brown Kiwi, Eastern, which is basically the east coast of the North Island, and Taranaki. So there's these 4 lineages. And of course, the other species have similar lineages within them, and that's how you get to your 11. Now, the other thing that is interesting when you look at some of the genetic studies is that some people have done some really interesting work looking at Māori cloaks that have been made with kiwi feathers. So when you pluck a feather, you get a little bit of blood in the end of that feather quill. Those that get sewn into cloaks and become a bit of a record. So some people that I know, they got that little bit of blood out of the end of the quill and sequenced that. And then you could compare those sequences to the DNA sequences of a lot of things that had already been sequenced. And what that gave us is a window into history. So a lot of those kiwi cloaks are really quite old. So it told us about the genetic diversity of kiwi much earlier in the human habitation of New Zealand. And what that told us is that in the past, kiwi populations were more genetically diverse than they are now. So we've lost kiwi genetic diversity, basically as we've lost kiwi due to predator incursions and habitat change and so on and so forth. So thinking about those 40-odd papers that have looked at the genetics, we're interested in, okay, so what does that tell us about the kiwi in Northland? And the first way we thought about this was, okay, how many kiwi are represented in those 40-odd studies? So there's about 2,000-odd individual kiwi that have been sequenced in some way. If you take that down to just the data set that has basically the same gene sequenced, right? So there's about 488. 250 of those are North Island brown kiwi. 38 are from Northland. So at the moment, our current understanding of kiwi population genetics from Northland is only 38 birds. So, and this is where our Kiwi Whakapa project comes in. Those 48 birds are probably from about 3 or 4 different populations across Northland. There are way more populations than that across that landscape. To really properly make good decisions about how you're going to manage all of those populations of kiwi, we've got to have an idea of what the genetic diversity across all of those are. So our Kiwi Whakapapa project is all about really broadening that data set with many, many more individuals to get a landscape genomic sort of picture as to what kiwi look like. And then we can start thinking about how to what that genetics tells us about the connectivity of populations and to put those together. So in terms of genomics, our understanding of genomics of kiwi up until our research, there's 4 key publications that have happened to date, well, to the end of last year. The first is the very first kiwi genome that was published by a German group. Not New Zealanders. Well, New Zealanders were involved, but those New Zealanders are now in Australia, so technically nobody from New Zealand was involved in that. That was a really interesting paper. What they were looking at was what does the genome of the kiwi tell us about the evolution of the bird, particularly from the perspective of it being nocturnal. So the group of birds that it belongs to, all the rest of them are active during the day. Kiwi's the only one that's active at night. So they're asking the question, what can we see in the genome that tells us about the evolution of nocturnal behaviour? It's really interesting. What they found was kiwi had lost activity of genes associated with seeing in colour. You don't need to see in colour at nighttime. Don't need that. It goes away. And it had gained a lot of interesting, I'll say it gained genes. That's not quite true, but it gained genes associated with olfactory. So it became really good at smelling. There's another group of organisms where you see the exactly same pattern, mammals. So you may have heard this, a lot of people would say that the kiwi is the bird that thinks it's a mammal. And it's kind of true from a genetic perspective. There were 2 papers looking at what's called transcriptomics of the kiwi. Now, what you can think of that is, if genomics is the whole genome, transcriptomics tells you about just the part of the genome that's expressed as proteins and enzymes, so the things that actually do stuff, right? So they were just looking at the parts of the kiwi genome that do stuff. And those two papers were comparing kiwi to other birds to get an understanding of how kiwi genes differ from other birds. And found a bunch of interesting stuff, but nothing that's really relevant to us right now. Recapitulated what we already know. Kiwi are quite different. They've got a evolutionary trajectory that's taken them down a different path to a lot of other birds. And the fourth paper, and the one that's most relevant to us, they use this little thing called GBS, which Rob's already talked about, to look at not the whole sequence of the whole genome, but little bits of the whole genome to get a representative picture of variation across the whole genome for all of the species of kiwi. And that, to date, is the most detailed examination of kiwi evolution that we have. And that's where we get the 38 kiwi from Northland that we currently understand. So within the Kiwi Whakapapa proposal, what we plan to do is use GBS and really vastly expand that data set and generate an enormous amount of information around genetic variability across populations of kiwi. The first thing we're going to do is look at what that tells us about how the populations are related. And that tells us, or that informs us about translocation by saying, okay, so here's population A, here's population B, they're cousins. It probably makes sense that if we want to, if population B, for instance, has quite low genetic variability, now that's not a great thing for the long-term survival of that population. A good example of that, right now you might be hearing about the kakapo that are having this huge problem with fungal infections and dying. So one of the possible reasons for that is that that kakapo population is really small, doesn't necessarily have a lot of great genetic diversity because it's a what we call a bottlenecked population, so there's not a lot of ancestors there. The genetic variability is low. They don't have the capacity in their genome to resist that fungal disease. So from a conservation perspective, we're concerned about populations that have low genetic variability because they potentially have a low capacity to resist change, be that disease or environmental change, things like that. So there's a real strong need to think about if you've got populations that you can show have low genetic variability, how can you, what's called, genetically rescue those populations by introducing new genetic variation? And one way to do that, as I said, if population B was not in a good way in terms of its genetic variability, but population A is doing quite well, and they're, you know, relatively closely related, moving birds from A to B makes sense. Now, the flip side of that coin is what's called hybrid birds. So on some of the offshore islands around Auckland, there's these hybrid populations, and they come from parents who were from Northland, and also from Taranaki. So you've got these birds that have a genetic hybrids between population, between Taranaki birds and Northland birds. At the moment, their conservation value is considered to be nil because the conservation movement doesn't really want to mix up Taranaki birds and Northland birds on the mainland because that's seen to be breaking down the separation of those two lineages. But what if adding a little bit of genetic variability from Taranaki into Northland birds or into a population of Northland birds does really good things for the genetic variability and survival? And we have reason to believe this might be true because these populations that are hybrids are doing really well. I mean, they're going gangbusters compared to a bunch of populations on the mainland that aren't. I mean, there are a number of reasons for that, but one of those is possibly poor, low genetic variability. So at the end of the day, within this Kiwi Whakapapa project, we aim to get a really good picture of the genetic variability of the populations, how that looks like on the landscape, what that looks like in history, and provide to iwi, hapu, conservation movements really good data to help them make decisions around what to do about the kaitiakitanga of this Taonga species. And I'll leave it at that.
You've been listening to excerpts from the Pint of Science 2019 series of talks at Brew Union in Palmerston North with NPR. To listen to more of these talks at a time that suits you, head to npr.nz/show/pint2019 for a full podcast list of all the talks held. Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.